Osiris.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
You're tuned in to The Show on the Road, a music discovery podcast where every episode I'll dive deep into the creative minds of your new favorite songwriters, band leaders, and sonic explorers who, like me, have dedicated their lives to traveling the world, telling their strange stories to anyone who'll listen. My name is Zach Lupitan. Let's go. This week on the show, I bring you a cross-freeway conversation I had with the leader of a daring electro roots outfit born and raised in the San Fernando Valley of LA, Run River North. I have to say I'm a little jealous of all the rest of the folks in the country who get to put sweaters on as it cools down, teetering towards November. I did vote today, and if you happen to be in the valley right now, it's probably about 105 degrees. A discerning Angelino could probably tell that I'm a Midwestern migrant, an adopted son of LA, and I've been here in this cracked, rainless paradise for over 12 years now, and being a Pisces dreamer raised on the shores of Lake Michigan, I've always tried to stay as close to the beach as possible, and as far, far away as I could get from the valley, that strip mall-strewn soulless backwater where it's 110 for half the year. But then I started changing my mind. It was after I caught up with Run River North's affable frontman and lyricist Alex Huang that I learned just how fertile the valley has been in producing rock and pop's finest modern moments, like Jenny Lewis and Rilo Kiley and the Ladies of Heim and System of a Down, Fishbone, Quiet Riot, and the legendary delicious Flying Burrito Brothers, and who could forget Tom Petty free-falling in love with that good girl from Reseda who loves Elvis and horses as the vampires of the valley on Ventura Boulevard lay in wait. Really, the area has been the epicenter of ethnic culture for nearly 8,000 years, with the Tongva, Fernandeño, and Chumash Indians settling the arroyos before the Spanish rolled up in 1769 and, air quotes, settled and saved the soul of the valley. But for Alex, Sally, and Daniel of Run River North, it's just where they're from. It's where Alex's South Korean family set up shop in an America that wasn't always so sure it wanted them there at all. And yes, this is definitely the first time, and maybe the last time, we'll have an all-Korean-American band on this show. And you know what? That's not good. Have you looked at what you've been listening to lately? Do all the bands and all the artists look kinda like you? Why is that? Are we sonically redlining artists of color from across the rock, pop, and Americana spectrums into another category altogether? Well, if you've never heard of Run River North, they've been around for almost 10 years. They used to be called Monsters Calling Home, and they found a waiting fan base who eagerly embraced their emotive songs about immigrant family dramas done masterfully with their acoustic instruments and a lush electronic backdrop. Alex and my early bands were all playing the same coffee shops and bars and pubs around LA about 10 years ago. But then a little kismet struck. They got some unexpected national publicity, they got signed to Network Records, and they put out their gorgeous self-titled rebrand record, Run River North. And soon, they were playing some of their biggest shows to date in festivals across Japan and South Korea. But Alex will be the first to tell you that the last few years have not been easy for these guys. They've had people leave the band. They've had to decide what their purpose is. But then they took a bold step. They cut ties with their label and went totally independent again, starting from scratch. And while many bands who can't tour at all and can't make new income during this pandemic are considering giving it up altogether, Daniel, Alex, and Sally were actually recording songs across town in their cars and making new music right now. And they put out a flurry of hooky pop folk gems like the smilingly subversive Pretty Lies, my favorite, which you'll hear in a bit, that have them cautiously more excited about the future than ever before. And what is going to happen in the future? Will the venue that you love to go to still be there in 2021 or 2022 when this all finally lifts? I don't know. Will the songwriters that have been the soundtrack of your life still be making new music next year? It's not a given. Many of us are taking a hard look for the first time if this artistic way of life is even possible. All I can say is the reason I do this show is to spread the good word about people making good work right now. And Run River North has some of the most emotionally powerful tunes that I've heard in a long time. So do me a favor. This week, try adding a few new bands to your record collection. Bands that maybe don't look like you and don't sound like anything that you have in your wheelhouse. It may seem strange, but we have forgotten how to listen deeply to new music. Many of the bands on this show, and I know it sounds strange, I never listened to the records at all. Bela Fleck, Steve Earle, Dar Williams, I knew the names, I heard them in conversation, but I never actually dove in. And then I did, and my life was changed for it. So, as always, I'm super glad you're here expanding your sonic palette with me. And if you love the show, please share it with your friends and family. Give us a review on iTunes and donate to the show, znlupitin at gmail on PayPal. And finally, let me tell you some rare happy news. October 29th and 30th, my band Dust Bowl Revival will be bringing back Sway at Home Fest. Sway at Home 4 will be coming to you in your homes via our Facebook page and YouTube. Indeed, we have not been able to have music festivals all summer and fall long, but this is a welcome reprieve. And we have people who have been on this very show, including Tim O'Brien, David Bromberg, Oliver Wood of the Wood Brothers, and The Mammals. Also for the first time, a short set by my new side project, Patio Club, with the wonderful LaShawn Haley, and finishing it out, an epic set by Dust Bowl Revival, live from Jam in the Van. I don't know why I started talking like that. Anyway, that's it for me for now. Please make sure you vote and vote early. I just dropped it in the Dropbox today. And here he is now, Alex from Run River North.
Gold, cold, diamonds and bones is what I want, is what I needed to keep from feeling old. I never did miss the burning sun. It's burning me, it's burning me out. Gold, cold, diamonds and bones is what I found underneath casino lights and rubber trees.
My name is Alex Huang, and I am part of Run River North.
Formerly Monsters Calling Home.
Correct. FKA MCH.
The artists formerly known as... I remember we played some shows with you guys when you were Monsters Calling Home, I think at Spaceland in Silver Lake. Rest in peace.
Oh, wow.
I think it was
Wild
Reeds.
Was Joe Pug playing?
Maybe,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, the Wild Reeds?
We're good friends with the Wild Reeds. I know you guys toured with them, right?
Yeah, yeah. I tried to get on their tour last year or 2 years ago. But yeah, I remember they opened for us way back when. Yeah, man, that was a long time ago.
I know. Well, we've all been at this for a while, and you guys have been really creating some amazing new music. Even with the shutdown, you have a new record coming out and some new singles that I woke up singing in my sleep, which was really annoying. But it means
that's what we do. We haunt your dreams.
It means that those songs are sticking in me.
Yes, we're excited.
Especially the Pretty Lies song. Da 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 better
hey. It's great. We've had those songs though. Like that one especially was from like last year, a writing session. So we have a couple of them even in the middle of Corona. That it's not that we were writing in the midst of Corona. We already were planning on releasing all of these anyway. So it just makes it seem like we're really productive.
So let's go back a little bit. You formed around, what, 2010, 2011?
Yes. 10, 11 is... 10 is probably when I started writing for Monsters Calling Home, and 2011 would be our we, I think one of my friends said, the day we auditioned a song as a band is when we birthed out, which was 2011, like July 31st.
And you're from LA originally?
Mm-hmm. Born and raised in the San Fernando Valley.
Yeah, I like when publicists write up a press release and they're like, Run River North, the band from the San Fernando Valley. It's like, does the rest of the country and the world know what that is, really? You know?
That's our crusade. We want people to know there's a San Fernando Valley where that's where, like, you know, that's the Karate Kid. That's Clueless. There's the Haim Band and a lot of cool stuff that isn't like LA proper. It's just over the hill.
So. My favorite line in Clueless is when she's calling her dad, Dan Hidea, and she's getting held up in the parking lot. And he's like, where are you right now? Kuwait? And she's like, is that somewhere in the valley?
It probably can be. It's probably as hot as Kuwait. Maybe not. Like, maybe a couple degrees, but it's pretty hot there.
Where in the valley specifically did you grow up?
Granada Hills, Northridge, right in the epicenter of the 94 earthquake.
I know some people were kind of freaked out because that rumbler that came through a few nights ago,
yeah,
was it exactly at 4:30 a.m. when the Northridge crane,
yep,
hit.
Both my wife and I didn't wake each other up. We thought each other were sleeping, and we were just waiting for it to, we were like both thinking, okay, do we start running? What do? We have our kits, etc. But both of us were trying not to wake each other up, not realizing that we were both just wide awake, waiting for it to be the big one.
Yeah, my wife works with the NPR station in town, KPCC, and they did that podcast called The Big One about what will happen and what you should do to prepare. And I found it kind of disturbing because they were doing these fictional enactments about how we would react, you know? If your, like, wife is across town at the office, but, like, you have no way of communicating, like, how do you find each other? And it was, like, both really informative, but also, like, I don't know if I want to know, like, how terrified we would be. Yeah. You know? What were you doing at the talent agency? Were you trying to sign acts?
No, man, I was working as an assistant. I was working at CAA in Century City. Started as, like,
Star.
The beautiful shiny ass Death Star. I started as a summer intern my junior year, I think, or no, I don't remember, somewhere in college. And then I got hired as like an internal floater, which is like their version of temps, and then worked in different departments and ended up landing in comedy touring to have my first boss, Pam Clear. And then I stayed around on that same floor, which is music touring as well, and got to work with Carol Kinzel. And she's like this, like, just legendary agent who, anytime Paul Tillett from Coachella needs acts, like, Paul will call Carol. And so I'd be on those calls, and it'd just be so fun just to hear him be like, Carol, I need Radiohead, please. And Carol would just be like, oh, I'll ask him and blah, blah, blah. And
that'll be $300,000 for 45 minutes.
Way more. And it was just crazy the amounts of money that went through. But yeah, so I worked there for at the Death Star for 3 years. So just getting like an education from the bird's eye view. So.
I think it is a good thing for musicians and artists in general to be on the other side of it in some form, because you can kind of empathize, but also, you know what to steer clear of when you're really trying to really launch your own small business, because that's what we do really as musicians. We have little businesses that are, selling these songs and stories that we create.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I remember working for Scott Rudin, this big producer.
Oh, yeah,
New York.
My friend used to work for him.
Dude. And, you know, everyone said how much of a holy terror he was. And but the guy made amazing work, on Broadway and in Hollywood. And I wanted to see how that would work as someone who thought it was I was going to be a screenwriter and a playwright, and it was both informative and disheartening because I saw that so much of the work came down to these overexhausted interns and these temps like you, weeding through thousands of scripts and book proposals and articles, trying to find what would be the next Juno or the next, you know, indie flick that would make $400 million.
Yeah.
And you guys, you know, have had a journey where you got onto Network, you know, a really respected label, and then chose to break free of that situation. What was the impetus to become independent again?
It was a long journey, actually. Network did a great job. Like, they signed us as, like, kind of a folky indie act. And then we pivoted and went to, like, alt rock. And I think it was their first time kind of dealing with that kind of alt rock radio. And with our second album, we had a little bit of success with our single. And then we couldn't find a way to push the second single to the amount of success as our first one. And, like, you know, everyone felt like, we were all bummed out and kind of blaming ourselves and each other. And then at that point, our half the band started to leave. And as we were kind of moving in and, you know, continuing to evolve, I think, like, we were just trying to figure out, like, how to market ourselves. And then Network was just kind of, you know, waiting for us to figure that out on our end. And then by the time we kind of came out of our cocoon, we thought, like, you know, I think we kind of know what we want. And it didn't seem like the label could kind of think more creatively or push us in the ways that we wanted to be pushed. They were always fans, and they're super supportive. And, like, you know, we all ended on a tearful, like, happy note. But it was just like we wanted to just kind of own our own stuff. And, you know, if things didn't go right, then it would be on us, and we wouldn't have anyone else to blame but ourselves. So it felt like we just wanted to be really independent and responsible for, you know, the success of our band, rather than, like, just waiting around for the radio campaign to, like, you know, fizzle out and be like, oh, okay, you know what, it didn't work out, let's just try it again.
Is Mr. Brightside the single that started taking off at first?
No, that one, I wish we kept it, because that's the one that, like, hopefully that's, like, paying off our debt to Network. But no, that one was just like I had done that cover before I even joined before I even created Monsters Calling Home. And I think it was just like part of an EP that we put on, knowing that it's pretty great and people were already wanting it, even when it wasn't, like, you know, like officially released on any digitals. But it was Runner Hide that kind of got going.
Lying in the dark with your shadow hanging over me, shaking the ground, your footsteps calling out my name.
You know, going back to that first self-titled record, Run River North, you know, you have this really cool dynamic in your band where you have classical elements with violin and cello, and then these big sort of epic rock choruses, you know, where you can bring just huge sound to an acoustic band in a way. And I don't think you guys ever were really an acoustic band.
Yeah, yeah. Just of the times, like, I think hearing Arcade Fire and Fleet Foxes and Mumford and bands just, like, kind of make huge noise, even with, you know, and just realizing how, like, big it sounds when you harmonize and you just have everybody singing. Yeah, I think we were able to really capitalize on that, or just be inspired by that at the time.
They're walking heavy to the beat of a broken drum.
digging for worth in a land under a foreign sun. Their children call bitter words of a strange tongue. Hearts down, they're walking heavy till the dying's done. Oh, oh, oh.
Yeah, I mean, that opening track, Monsters Calling Home, it's almost like your calling card telling people, yes, like, okay, this is sort of where we come from. Yeah. And you guys are unique in the sense that you've always had an all Korean American band. And you spoke about how that idea of Monsters Calling Home is sort of paying homage to your parents who came from South Korea, and how they had to work their way into American society. And I'd like to hear a little about your folks and how, you know, your music coincides with your relationship with, you know, having a Korean American band.
Yeah, I think like a lot of immigrants' families, whether it is from, you know, Korea or elsewhere, it's like they know that America has a lot of opportunity, and they give up on you know, their own cult, like, you know, they leave their own culture behind and come here and have to learn an entire language. My dad had a degree in like statistics that didn't like translate, so he had to, you know, find small businesses to start up, starting from like liquor stores, or, you know, my friend's dad's had like dry cleaners, and then my dad had like a shoe store. My mom, you know, yeah, again, like not knowing the language, like try to be a dental assistant, and then just housewife. And as they're doing that, we're growing up completely American, going to elementary schools where kids are telling us that, oh yeah, I'm gonna go camping with my dad, or, you know, I've got Lunchables, and etc. And then we've got this like these weird Korean foods that like black seaweed and like all the stuff now that like is all in the rage, like, but yeah, back then like kimchi was just like, what the fuck is that? And then, yeah, you know, wanting, for me it was like, yeah, my parents were too busy loving us by working their asses off to just, you know, provide for us, that I was like, why don't you play with me, dad, or why don't we go camping, or why don't you say I love you, you know, and all that. And then I think at a certain point, you know, I was lucky to realize it early on, but like that was their love language, to just work and sacrifice their entire dreams just to make us have the opportunity to dream. And obviously they're like, you know, get the most stable, richest jobs you can, like, you know, be a doctor, be a lawyer, be an accountant, and I think
be a rock and roll musician.
Yeah, right. And so when I said like be a rock and roll, I'm gonna do a band, I knew like the circumstances. I told them, because I had gotten a full tuition scholarship to a private college, and so I didn't have any debt, and I wasn't like, you know, incurring anything to my parents. And I was like, I've been working, I've been saving, I can, let me just, I negotiated like, I'll do this for a year. And if it doesn't work out, then I'll start finding part-time jobs, and I'll start, like, you know, looking for a different career. But let me try this. So all of that was, like, infused into the music. Like, I before, you know, I'd be doing, like, covers of, like, stupid Jason Mraz songs or, you know, Oasis. And then I didn't really feel like I felt my – I heard my voice until I started just singing about my family. And then once I felt like, okay, this feels – you know, authentic, in terms of no one else can really say that this is theirs. And so that was kind of like, you know, and I would draw at CAA like Monsters Calling Home over and over and over again, trying to find the right font, trying to find a logo. And I think, yeah, that's it. And I think it was like, to kind of coincide, there was this year where I kind of took a break from playing music, and I just like focused on, you know, working at CAA and then being like a youth teacher at my church, and just kind of keeping my mouth shut. And in that year, like everyone's immigrant parents' skeletons started coming out of their closets, and like they kept telling me about it, and I kept hearing these stories of like, oh, you know, yeah, my dad had an affair, had a whole entire family in Korea. Or like, you know, yeah, my dad used to be an alcoholic and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you just have to bear with it. And there was this, like, there's this thing in Korean, I think, male culture that you just kind of, like, bear your shame and you hold it in and you don't talk about it because someone else probably has it worse than you. And it's not, you know, worth bringing up like that and destroying your family's reputation. So I luckily, like, I just heard about those things. And even in my own family, like, some of the skeletons coming out. And that's kind of like that two-pronged effect of, like, you know, finding my voice and singing about my family. And then hearing about all these family stories, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna write a song or maybe do... I think Where the Wild Things just had just come out with, like, yeah, you know, Karen O, like... and the Arcade Fire doing, like, all these songs. And I was like, man, I want to, like, make a children's book for adults called Monsters Calling Home. And here's, like, the theme song for it. And then it just evolved into actually just being a band. Yeah.
That's an awesome story. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of families, you know, they have, like, the one sensitive artistic kid in the family who takes it upon himself to be the storyteller and to catalog the family behavior in a way. And it's always amazing to me where when I look at my own family, it's like nobody really almost cares about the history or wants to know about it. Whereas, like, us writers are like, let's talk about every angle of that tragedy, you know?
Right. Actually, yeah, that's very true. Like, sometimes, like, yeah, some things are better left unsaid, but some things are just remarkable when you bring it up and uproot things. But I think, I feel like the intention or the end result has to be not that you want to, like, put it on display and, like, you know, like it's a museum of bones or, like, of tragedy, but I really do think the end game of, like, you know, trying to dig up all these stories is actually just to replant them and then realize that those are just the bones of things. And I think that just singing about the shit that happened isn't necessarily the end game. It's really like learning how to just put it back in and actually, like, you know, have maybe a proper burial or proper memorial service, and then realizing the fruit that comes out of when you let it go and you know, that's really the good stuff. So I think after our first album, like, I had to stop talking about my daddy issues. Like, I needed to like kind of evolve and grow, or else, like, yeah, it's a great note to sing and everybody, every generation will probably relate to, but, like, myself, I wouldn't, like, grow as a person, and I would just be a stunted crybaby talking about the same issues over and over and, like, reliving, you know, a very real moment, but, like, you know, like, that's not the, I don't know. I think, yeah, it should be an ongoing process, an evolving process, rather than just, like, yeah, just looking for the bones to dig up and be like, look at how shitty things were, and let me try to rhyme, you know?
I don't
know.
Yeah. So, do your folks come to your shows?
Yeah. They come when they can, but they're really old. Like, my parents had me pretty late, and me and my brother, and my mom has fought through cancer, and so they're just like, if I can't sit down and if I can't leave early, yeah, I'm definitely, I don't invite them to everything. Whenever it's like a nice one, like, we played at the Fonda, which was amazing, and we played we opened for the band Joseph, and I was like, yes, this one I should bring my parents to. But, like, if I'm playing at, like, the Bootleg or, like, you know, something a little bit more just
past 11 p.m.
I'm just like, no, you definitely don't have to come, so it's fine.
And you guys played a festival in South Korea, right? The
Pentaport down in Incheon, and it was like a two combo, that one and our biggest one ever was Summer Sonic over in Tokyo and Osaka.
What was that like?
Incredible, unbelievable, definitely, probably, the highlight for us as a band in terms of culturally speaking, and also just as a band, like that was our biggest, those were our biggest three shows. So yeah, but it was also like, it was also bittersweet because like we went to Korea around the same time. My mom was in Korea getting surgery and chemo done, as well as I was like just married, and you know, we had gotten on our honeymoon, and then my wife came over to join us in Korea and Japan. And like right before our first show in Japan, like we had one of the biggest fights in our lives.
Oh wow.
So it was a mixed bag, but it was incredible. Like we got to play a couple different shows in Korea, and yeah, it was, we were trying to go back there earlier this year, but it was incredible. Just like seeing people liking our songs, and we're from there, but it's definitely our parents' country. And even our parents, like my parents haven't gone back in like 30 years, so it's not even their country either. So like we're coming back, and there is this like there is this thing where like second, like you know, first or second generation Korean Americans, when they go back, like a lot of them have like a pretty shitty attitude, and like, oh yeah, we're American, we're so cool. And then the Koreans there are just like, we're really great without you. You know, you don't even speak well, and you talk like you're a third grader. So what are you doing? So like, it's definitely like, it's great when they do acknowledge, you know, our music, and it was a really fun time. So it was great. It was great.
So let's keep going. So you then release, so you do the self-titled release with Network, Run mm-hmm. River North. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're still kind of getting your name out there. What was the thing that started really, you know, getting people to pay attention to you nationally?
We recorded our song Fight to Keep in our Honda cars in the valley, going to McDonald's, and the audio and the video was all, you know, like from the car, because we didn't have this was before the record. So we did that, and then Honda we pretended like it was sponsored by Honda, and then uh-huh. Honda's ad agency kind of came through, and like they were like, oh cool, like who are you guys, like, you know, we'd love to like kind of like document your story and then maybe like have you guys play for some Honda executives as like a thank you. And we were like, that's cool. And then we thought definitely something was up, just because the year before they had given this guy who had driven 1,000,000 miles on his Honda, they gave him a new car. So I was like, dude, it'd be great if they gave us like a touring Honda van or something. So we go to this hotel where they say like Honda execs are gonna be there. We're playing the sound check, and then they stop us, and they're like, you know, there really isn't a thing going on. And we're like, in our heads, we're like, this is it. And then they go, but instead of a show here, you're actually going to go play on Jimmy Kimmel Live, and you're going to play right across the street in a couple hours. So that was like, it was like really surreal, where we just didn't expect it. We didn't have time to kind of like soak it in. And we went over, you know, next door. It was an incredible green room. Like, we got to meet Guillermo, and then we played on, you know, national TV. And then they were like, this is going to air next week, so you got to keep quiet. So like for 1 week, we're like, right. Oh my God, we're so badass. We're like going to be on national TV. We'll get all these record labels to come and sign us. Cause we had like been invited by like Atlantic and Warner to kind of have dinner. And we're like, okay, we'll get these, you know, it's going to be great. And then all the major labels kind of just like ghosted us. And then Network was like, we're still here, we love you guys. And then we had a great meeting with them. And so that's how we signed. So that was kind of our big break prior to like our release of the Run River North album. So it was like getting on Kimmel and then releasing an album, getting a couple of, you know, kind of good looks, and then going on tour. That was kind of our first how we kept going. But then right in the middle of, or like right at the end of our first like headlining tour, I really did not like Daniel in the band, who's still in it, ironically, and I wanted to kick him out, and I hated him. I just didn't like him as a person. And we had to like go through some like what is it called when a facilitator
mediation?
Yeah, mediation. My pastor had to mediate a discussion with us, and I was like, yeah. And then we kind of pulled through all of that, and that was our first leg of Run River North, I guess. Yeah.
And you guys have had some lineup changes, and now, you know, the three piece that makes up the core of the band is you, Daniel, and Sally King, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
I mean, look, your differences with Daniel aside, sometimes that friction does create amazing shit. That's like the annoying thing about creative people. I had a similar situation with another Daniel who was in our band for many years, and we wrote really cool stuff together. Like, not a lot, but like the two or three songs we would write every like year were like the highlights of the album.
Nice.
Every time.
Yeah.
And the problem with working with him is that we're both so kind of hard-headed about like how things should sound or like which direction this song should go in.
Yeah.
That it's hard to not fight for your ideas. Right. At every point.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that's not very fun to work like that.
Definitely.
You know? Yeah. How are you guys able to work through your differences?
We have gone through a lot. I mean, I think because even the other three, like everyone was in our band, it was like a co-owner, like everybody was equal owners of the company. So I had fought for that, and I wanted to make sure that was the case. And so, you know, some people are meant to be owners and some people just like don't want to like put in all the effort. And so through it all, I know that Daniel had always, he worked his ass off, and he knew, because he came from like a finance background, he knew like this, what we were doing was like really special.
Right.
So I think how we've made it work is just, it's been a long process, but we even in the midst of us being really mad at each other, him and I went to Nashville to work on new songs for the second album together. So like we're just mature about it. We were like, okay, this is setting our personal differences aside. When we're creating music, it really works. Like I work on the lyrics and the just like the big picture stuff, or like what the song is going to be about, and he's just brilliant musically. Like, and I leave it to him. Like, I don't get in the way there unless, like, I just have to. And so I have no ego about the music about it. And then, he takes
care
of that.
That's hard to do, though, not having ego about the music part.
Yeah, I don't know. Something about it, like, or at least I think when I do have an ego about it, he understands where I'm coming from. I'm never, like, I'm never making decisions about the music just so that I can put my stamp on it, or I'm just like, I think this is important. And usually he's just trying to translate what I'm saying. And I think because of that reason, like, because I don't have any ego about the music part and he doesn't have any ego about the lyrics and, you know, what I'm saying, like, that just kind of keeps us in our own lanes, but at the same time kind of interwoven nicely and efficiently. And so
one of the new singles, Spiders, was also partially recorded in a Honda. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah. Sally and Daniel did the vocals on their end. My vocals are actually from my iPhone 7 with a sock pop filter. All of it was recorded like over Zoom, like mixed over Zoom or like sent over. It was definitely a Corona song for sure.
And you did a video with you guys dressed up in like hazmat suits in downtown LA, which is pretty funny.
I just like was so bored at my coffee shop that I work at. And my coworkers are just really, they're actually fantastic directors and DPs. And they had the idea of doing like a one take after like we were all crushing over like Paul Thomas, P.T. Anderson's like one take music videos, or Alfonso Cuarón's like, what is it, the Children of Men sequence, where it's just like one whole take. So we were like, let's do something like ambitious, and there's no one here anyways. Oh, here are some hazmat suits from our Halloween party 2 years ago, and let's just do it. And it rained perfectly
all the elevators hit at the right time, and after seven takes, we had the perfect take, and it worked out like as if we had so many people behind us, but it was just like his iPhone and his gimbal, and that was it. And it was a three-person endeavor, and it worked out as if it was like a huge team.
Spiders up the wall, up to the ceiling. I can't shake them all, 'cause no one sees them. Why the silly face when the room's so serious? No one's happy and it's never enough. Just the way it is, just the way it is. It's just the way it is for now. Just the way it is, just the way it is. It's just the way it is for now.
Probably the last time it's rained in LA. When has it rained since then?
Yeah, I feel like has. Yeah, you're right. I think maybe it's drizzled a couple times, but you know, LA summers. It's always like fires and droughts, so pretty usual.
Well, you have that line in the song "Spiders" that feels very symbolic of what a lot of people are going through in this sort of limbo period. You know. Where no one's like really happy and it's never enough.
Right. Yeah. I think there is something to be said though about like sometimes you just need a smile first to be happy. And I think sometimes, especially now, it's like if you can't go and do those things to elicit like that, those endorphins and those memories and that feeling, you have to force yourself to find different ways to find that happiness come through. Because I think even as we were touring and doing live music, you know, it was still a battle then to like stay present and be happy. So
that's true.
I don't think the coronavirus or the what things are doing is like it's an attack on our happiness. It's almost just like, hey, like how can you find it? And it shouldn't be reliant on like on these outside things. I think it's like it's scary, but it's like a huge mirror is just put up against everybody in the world and be like, hey, like what is important to you? Like how can you find it? And I think the sad part is the true part is though, like it does, like we all need each other, and like having people around is super important, and that not having that definitely sucks.
Your newest single, Pretty Lies, which I mentioned as the song that woke me up in the middle of the night, mm-hmm. thanks for that, I think also symbolizes for me what makes your music so unique in that it has these huge dynamic shifts. You know, you have the acoustic vibe underneath, and then it turns into like a Weezer rock epic jam, you know?
Yes.
And then it comes back down. But yeah. you're going for the hook, but you have this warm underbelly that doesn't make it like a slick, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rock thing.
Yeah, I think we were always like, we're very aware of like, okay, this is what music sounds like right now. This is what we're doing. What do we want to do? And I think we just got really lucky because like when we were writing with the guys of Sir Sly, like, because we all like were on the same wavelength of like, I love bass guitar, or like I love an acoustic guitar when it's done this way. And then you're like, okay, I like rap too. Like, what can we make it without being like super corny? And then we were like, yeah, if Sally sings, then it's like just perfect. And I think things were just like in place and just like naturally just coming through. And everyone in the room was just like, why not? Like, if we couldn't answer that question, then, you know, we just went for it. And so it felt like a really fun song to make. And I think that really comes out with how, like, eclectic and weird it is.
Yeah, because for 2 minutes, it's not very heavy. And then it gets real heavy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's my favorite part.
Sick in a secret way, telling a pretty lie, ugliest way to die. I kill the story off.
on the passenger side. I could tell the truth or I could keep telling pretty lies. I could tell the truth or I could keep telling pretty lies.
The reason I bring up Weezer, especially like Blue Album era Weezer, is that I felt like they would have these very intimate, almost acoustic jams, like My Name is Jonas, you know? And then halfway through the song, you're like, oh shit, let's get into the mosh pit right now.
Yeah.
And it made it accessible to someone like me who really wasn't into like loud rock. But all of a sudden I was like, wait, I've been gently pushed into the mosh pit, and now I'm in, and I like it.
Yeah. I don't think I'm a big mosh pitter either, but I think, I think you're right. Like, if you can kind of gently bring people in, and then you realize you're already in it, then you're like, oh, man, I like green eggs and ham, you know? And you're like, okay, cool.
And when you say, you know, I don't want to keep telling pretty lies to you, who do you feel like you're talking to in that song?
For me, yeah, I feel like all the time, I think the most in every song, if I the lyrics that like I'm gonna sing, they usually start accusing somebody else. But if I can't tell it to myself, then I usually like, ah, this is bad. But when I find out that like I'm actually talking to myself, then I really believe it. So I think definitely it's like, definitely the finger that I'm pointing is always pointing back at me.
There's a podcast called Hidden Brain on NPR, which is great, about people's behavior and psychological trends. And there was a Canadian psychologist on there talking about how these studies show that when you're with other people, you behave in this like very best self version. When you're with your wife or your husband in the silence of your home, you're not telling them anything, and you're not like really expressing yourself, and you're not sharing your knowledge. A lot of times you're hiding that from the person that you should be sharing with most, which is kind of fascinating.
I agree. Yeah, it's and especially now, like, it's not just friends, like you have internet identities, you have all these avatars in different ways, and so you're just like, you have so many ways to tell pretty lies and so many ways for people to and I feel like, yeah, that's all of social media and all of like what's going on randomly. I feel like Pretty Lies is way more of a Corona song than Spiders, where it just seems like we just don't care whether things are true. We just care if it's like viral and it aligns with the emotion of the day that we have, or the, you know, party line that we have, and like, oh shoot, yeah, this is it.
How has your relationship with your wife changed since the shutdown?
We've been finding out, I think it's been great for our marriage. Like, just like you said, like every night it's like, hey, there you are, like, okay.
Yeah.
So it's really shown us how to communicate long term. And also it's kind of been showing us like sometimes we do need some space. And like for her, like when we were going on tour, weirdly enough, we got married and she got in our life when we were kind of going through a lot of our own band breakups. So we did tour, but we weren't like so much on tour. And I feel like she always misses me a lot, and she gets FOMO, and she thinks we're having so much fun, and I have to keep like showing her like band life, tour life is like good for 45 minutes, like 23 hours of the day. It is like really like not glamorous, but she, you know, so like she would always miss me. She would always like want to be around. And then like now that we're around each other for so long, we're both realizing how important it is to kind of like have our own time. And like, you know, hang out in whatever capacity with our own friends and allow that to like kind of like fuel us so that when we are together, we don't get sick of each other. So, yeah.
There's a love song off your Monsters Calling Home, Volume 1 through 2, Sad Takes record. The only one, which I love. Which
is
this back and forth, you know, sort of the male and the female perspective in that, you know, that line, if you're going to let me down easy because I'm barely hanging on. Don't make it last too long.
Yeah.
Just sort of the beautiful pain of a love affair really captured so well there.
Yeah, I think you're combining two songs. One, I think only one on the MCH Volume 1, 2, 3 is a cover of the Black Keys. And the song you're talking about is Let Me Down, which is on MCH Volume 2 EP, which that's an original song. And that one, you're right.
I don't know why I wrote that, but yes, keep going. Yeah.
That one we wrote with this guy named Derek Furman, and we had written a couple songs with him. He's just like great melody writer. But we had written that, and then like when we went in to record it with our producer Miro Mackey, that day, like I think I'm just giving you the, we don't fight all the time, but like Susan and I had a really big fight where it got so bad. Like I was in my car in the parking lot yelling at my phone, and she was at the apartment yelling at her phone, and I yelled so much it was like I played three shows. And then so the next day I come in, I'm like, guys, I don't know if I can sing this. This sounds terrible. And then so I couldn't sing it that day, but the next day as I was still recovering, Miro was like, you know what, just go in and see how you feel. And like there is such an honesty in that take that we got. Like you, like I hear the fight from my voice, especially towards the end. But yeah, that it's called Let Me Down.
Let me down easy. I'm barely hanging on. If you're gonna let me down, so don't make it last too long. If you're gonna let me down, I'm barely hanging on, so don't make it last too long.
I always remember that story that Paul McCartney tells about when they recorded Twist and Shout.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
He had blown his voice out, like recording and then smoking and partying and you know, had a long night, and then they were like, well, we got this studio time. We're supposed to do this vocal right now. Mm-hmm. And John Lennon's just like, dude, just like scream it. You know, like how Little Richard or someone would do it.
Yeah.
Like, these are your heroes. They would just gut it out.
Yeah.
Like, you can gut it out. And you could hear him like barely getting there.
Yeah.
And it's so like raw and so real because he's almost not able to sing it in tune, but he just makes it.
Yeah, wow.
You know? And I think that's something that I've realized recording over the last few years is that edge of barely being able to reach your note is what makes that note feel so satisfying when you get there.
Yeah.
It's not good for your voice, though. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
That's why I sound kind of crispy right now. I've been recording some demos of some songs that I probably shouldn't be singing in E, or, you know, E is like one of those belt keys where I'm like, can you sing in that key?
Yeah.
But I'm like, I'm going to do it anyway, mostly because like when a song hits you, it's like falling in love. You're like, I got to get this out. I got to like, I got to, you know, write it down and mark it down for history.
Yeah.
Even though you listen to it the next day and you're like, was that good?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, the last song I'm going to ask you about is another single that will be coming out in your forthcoming record, which I've just been jamming to for the last few days over and over again, the Wake Up tune that you guys wrote.
Nice.
Because it feels like almost like a call to action or protest, but in this really sort of fun-loving, gentle way, you know, you're like, all right, everybody, like, wake the fuck up, here we go.
Yeah. Two things about that song. One, that made me realize I have a tendency to go to the major third on a lot of things. Like, I really like the major third.
It's your happy place.
It's my happy place. And secondly, yeah, that one was, I remember falling in love with that one. That one was such a, because like we had done the Circe Lie sessions and wrote Pretty Lies and another song, and we were like, this is great. We like everything else is, we don't have anything else to do. This is great. And then the next day we were scheduled to do another writing session, and I had no idea who this kid was. His name was Nick Anderson. He's from this kind of like a pop punk band called The Rex. And we were like, all right, it's in the valley. We should try it anyways, but whatever. And then we go in, and like 8 crazy hours later, we have Wake Up, and we were like, what the hell was that? And we just had like, we just met an insane mad scientist of a musician. This guy was really off the wall, and like we got Wake Up out of that. And it was like, I just remember like, we were playing it back as we're like in hour 8 of the writing session, and we're just like kicking, and like we're like, oh my god, and then the crowd's gonna do this, and like holy shit, and like I just remember everyone being so hyped off of that first day just recording it. Like we met that day, and in 8 hours we had Wake Up, and so that was a good day.
Sunday morning back in my place, you can sleep late, I don't mind. Break some eggs, make a mixtape, and let it play like 20 times. I ain't got no money, but I got lots of time. So let's spend a little, live a little, cause every day the sun will rise. Come smell the roses, oh, come take your time.
I mean, it's not a protest song per se, but I feel like it could be interpreted as one years from now, considering that it came to be in this time of mass wokeness.
I guess it would hopefully, and it does every time we sing it. Like everyone loves singing that part, like, we ain't got no money, but we got lots of time. Sounds like what's happening, and weirdly enough. But I feel like I love it because, like, it doesn't, like you said, it's not a protest song where, like, there's a marching beat or, like, some, like, really serious chords. They're just, like, they're just some really fun, funny things, and it's not taking itself too seriously. But at the same time, yeah, the words seem pretty serious and spot on right now, weirdly enough.
If you could tell yourself something as you're sitting here now, but you could talk to yourself when you were a kid just starting to write music, what would you tell yourself?
Ooh, learn the piano, dude. Learn it right now. Maybe that here, listen to some of these artists, because I have so many blind spots. You would be so shocked at how little music I know. Or maybe I would just be like, yo, great job, you're gonna have a lot of fun. Maybe get into yoga a little earlier. And I don't know. Yeah, I think it's weird, because like that question, I wrote a song called Growing Up, and that was what it was. Like, what would my 80-year-old self go back and tell my 15-year-old self? And I thought, more so than like life lessons, I was way more interested in the kid telling the 80-year-old guy, like, yo, back off. Like, you're almost going to die. Like, I've got my whole life in front of me, and I'm going to live like there's no tomorrow. And that's something, like, I think that's the beauty of youth, where like you make decisions not realizing like some of the repercussions could be, you know, detrimental, but like you come out with like such like bombastic, like courageous things, and you do brave things, not almost like fearlessness, because you don't know what the outcome is going to be. So like it's in this weird space where I don't know if I want to prepare my 15-year-old self like writing songs, or yeah, I don't know.
There's a fight to be won for the love you find at home. Work to be done before you rest your weary bones. I'm finding peace don't come to everyone I know. So I will love in this life till I finally have to go. Said I will love in this life till I finally have to go.
It has been fun kind of seeing people cooking at home and learning their family recipes for the first time.
Yeah.
I've been learning a lot of home cooking techniques off of TikTok, which may be banned in the next month, but until then.
Until then,
I'm going to keep enjoying it.
Yeah.
Is there something that you learned to cook from your folks?
Yeah. Well, let's see. My folks. My mom, up until like very recently, she's still like both our moms would like just keep like preparing dishes for us to try. Weirdly enough, I've learned all my Korean dishes now on YouTube through this like one lady. Her name is like Mangchi, and which means hammer in Korean. I don't know why. But she's awesome. She's like, I think she's single-handedly, like, for a while, was the only like Korean mom that could speak a little English, could teach all of, you know, our generation how to cook Korean food. And she's just like wildly popular. But the dishes that I've learned from my culture and that my mom has helped me, there's like this braised short rib dish that like every Korean son, it's probably their favorite dish because it's a little sweet. It's like massive pieces of meat and like potatoes, and like it's just like a decadent like royal meal. And it's pretty popular now in some Korean restaurants, but it's called like galbijjim. Mm. And it's like a stewy, kind of spicy, like big pieces of meat, and it has a little bit of sweetness to it, and then you're just like, it's a great dish if you're a meat eater. I've learned to make that, and it's never as good as my mom's, but it's getting close.
Yeah, I fell in love with Korean food in high school in Chicago. My girlfriend at the time, her parents taught, I think, like martial arts, and they also would just take us to these Korean restaurants like every time we would hang out with them. And he spoke Korean for some reason. He's an older white guy. I'm not sure why, but and I just became obsessed with that flavor palette. And every time we land somewhere on tour, I have to convince my van to go to a Korean spot wherever we are, because it's usually open super late at night. And yeah. I definitely have converted as many people as possible to the wonders of Korean cookery, but I'm, you know, probably pretty bad at attempting it at home, but I've tried to do a few things. I really dug this Korean sesame egg recipe that I learned on TikTok, where you like marinate the egg, you know, the soft boiled eggs overnight and like this sesame ginger paste.
Yeah.
And like, oof.
Yeah.
So good.
Dude, yeah, when you that kind of sesame oil in Korean cuisine is like the truffle. It just like makes everything magical. And I think if you just like, if you take just like rice and you put sesame oil with your soy sauce and then like drop an egg in there and mix it up, it is delicious. Yeah.
Is there a Korean spot in LA that you recommend to folks?
Tons. I live in the heart of K-Town. There's like four right down the street. I think recently I've been into this fried chicken place by this guy. It's a one-man shop. It's called Gortong, which is like Goltong.
Is that the one in that little parking lot that just has a little like kiosk type thing?
No, it is in like a mini mart, like mini plaza. It's on Western and 4th. I don't know if I saw a kiosk there, but It's a brick and mortar, but he's a failed Korean film director. And he started a chicken shop in Korea, which got really famous. And then I think he moved over here. And so in his shop, like, you can see, like, posters of his movies that he's made.
That's amazing.
And he's got these, like, thick eyebrows and, like, these thick, like, black rimmed glasses. He looks like a director. And it's just him making this chicken. And he loves, like, showing off the chicken. Like, you can only order it to go and delivery, but like as he's bringing it out to you, like he opens it up and goes like, look at this. And he goes, give me the 5-star Yelp review. People have been saying this is the best chicken. And he's like, don't rush me, but I will get it to you in 10 minutes. He's a character. And the chicken is so good. Like it's like he has like wings, but like his chicken tender kind of thing where he like just fries an entire chicken and like all the bits and pieces, and he adds like, I don't know, avocado and like fruit on one of the spicy one. Shit. He has a soy garlic one that like is just amazing. I ordered, like, I gotta be honest with you, I ordered it like 2 days in a row, like yesterday and the day before, for guests, and then also just me and my wife just like wolfed down like $27 worth of chicken.
What's the place called again?
Gortong. So it's G-O-L and then space T-O-N-G.
Noted.
The dude is hilarious. Like the number on the Yelp is his phone number. Like it's his cell phone. And yesterday when I called it to order, he was like 10-15 minutes, and I like the day before he took a little bit longer, so I was just chilling at home, and I get a text of he took a picture of the chicken and he was like, it's ready. I'm like, holy shit, this guy loves his chicken. So yeah.
The reason I asked if it was in like a kiosk in a parking lot, because my sister just moved to K-Town as well, and she's a vegetarian, but she's been walking by this place for like months during quarantine with her dog, and she's like, you know what, fuck it, I'm getting this fried chicken sandwich. She sends me this picture. She's like, yeah, I'm in a weird mood today, having a fried chicken sandwich, and it's fucking worth it.
Wow. I wonder, because I know there's Dave's Hot Chicken, like two places in K-Town. If she's into vegetarian food, I mean, like Korea, K-Town is perfect for that. Does she do noodles?
Oh yeah.
Man, I could recommend some. I'll text you a couple places for your sister.
All right, introduce one more song for folks to hear.
Cemetery is our next single. It's acoustic guitar with a little bit of synth, and it's very romantic, and it's about the first like official date that my wife and I had when we were dating, where I wanted to take her to the cemetery because I like certain cemeteries that like are really calm and peaceful, and I feel like I get to like be face to face with death in a way that isn't creepy. And there's this one in like Glendale that I went for like a friend's funeral, and it was very sad. He took his life, and like, but then at the same time I was looking around and I was like, this is a magical cemetery. Like it seems like it's like a Narnia land. Like there was just like I didn't know where certain streets were gonna go. And so I asked my wife at the time, I was like, can we go to the cemetery, kind of as a litmus test? If she was like hell no, I'll be like, okay, well then maybe we're not gonna date too long. But she said yes, and we went to this cemetery. And there was a secret garden halfway through the cemetery. There was a statue of David, like, randomly there. And we were, like, it was just, like, around every turn there was something new. And so this song kind of is just that mood where, like, yeah, it was a weird vibe where, like, you never think, like, it's going to be a cemetery. But it's at a random place where, like, I felt we really connected. And so the song kind of is, like, a very, yeah, just a nice romantic little getaway song, more coffee shoppy, but Daniel and Sally, they still add their flavor to it, so it doesn't completely, you know, live just in a coffee shop. So it's great. Like, you hear her voice, you hear the doubling up of her, and yeah, you have just enough synth where it doesn't, like, it's not just acoustic guitar, but the acoustic guitar in it is so beautiful. And we wrote that with Chris Chu of Pop Etc. They used to be called Morning Benders. I love their stuff. They were the first like Asian indie band that I got to see on YouTube, and I was like, holy shit, these guys are like really good. And we got to meet them in Tokyo, ate noodles with them, and then a couple of months later, Chris was like, hey, I'd love to write with you. And then we wrote a couple of songs with them, one of them being I'm Amazing, which is on volume 2 of MCH, which is a completely different song from the other stuff that we wrote. So it just kind of shows how talented this guy is. But yeah, that's the long. I'm really excited for Cemetery. It's coming out soon. It'll be a nice little appetizer compared to the main dishes that we've had.
I think we all need to eat lunch now.
I'm so hungry.
Yeah. I'll meet you at the chicken spot.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for talking to me, man. I'm glad that you stuck with it, and you know, you've created some really beautiful work.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Was it Tuesday in the summer when you started sleeping on my couch? And I lost track of the details of what is and what isn't allowed. Midnight in the cemetery. This day started ordinary, but now I'm wishing I could slow the whole world down.
Cemetery by Run River North, and that will be on the newest record coming in late January. It will be called Creatures in Your Head. I don't think they've even shared that with the world yet, so you know it here first. You can go to their website, runrivernorth.com, to find their new music, including this Friday, a new single called One for Me. Honestly, I am both intimidated and jealous by the amount of good new music Run River North is putting out during this shutdown, and speaking of new music, my band Dust Bowl Revival put out a new song called Beside You. It is also on our purple vinyl. That is a great way to support a band that you love when they cannot tour and come and see you. Go to DustBowlRevival.com for more. And if you miss going to music festivals and seeing groups from all over the world convene in one place, never fear. Dust Bowl Revival's Sway at Home Fest is back October 29th and 30th. I'm announcing it right here, and the lineup is being revealed this week, including people who have been on this show like David Bromberg, Tim O'Brien, and the Mammals, and folks I'm really excited to see like blues legend Guy Davis. All you have to do is go to our Facebook or our YouTube October 29th and 30th. We'll see you there. Big thanks to The Bluegrass Situation for flinging our podcast into the universe where you all can hear it. And if you like this podcast, support their other podcasts like Beth Bears' Harmonics, where this week she talks to Mary Gaucher, who is on our Sway at Home Fest 3 in July. As always, if you want to be a friend, please leave us a kind review on iTunes, share this show with your friends and family, and you can donate to us, znlupitin@gmail.com on PayPal. Big thanks to Sean Erno for sending a donation this week. That's it. Enough from me. I'm signing off. Please, please, please vote. We can do this together if we all try a little bit harder, and I'll see you next week on the trail.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like chocolate.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.